Hello, and welcome to Mornings with Joel, Commercial Real Estate Podcast, where we focus on rising stars and established players in commercial real estate and talk to them about how they are building legacies in today's marketplace. Hello, we'd like to welcome you to the Mornings with Joel CRE Podcast. We're back in the studio this week and excited to have Ron Busby with us today. Now, Ron comes from very diverse background. He's going to be helping us to appreciate what the Black Chamber is actually doing for minorities in this space and how it's actually expanded beyond that. So we'll talk about that into a little bit of detail. But Ron, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show, and thanks for getting up early this morning to join us.
No, I went when I got the offer to come, I was super excited, and so it didn't matter what time it was. So I have to be here. So that's not really a question.
All right, cool. So that's real good. So Ron, I gave a little bit of an introduction. Obviously, we got a chance to meet through the Black Chamber, but tell us a little bit about, you know, who you are and what's your role right now, and then we'll, you know, go into a little bit of background.
Yeah, I'm Ron Busby, Jr., and I work at Buy Black. I'm the head of product there, and a lot of my focus is really on how do we ultimately bring different parts of a really disparate universe into the discussion. So I work with corporate partners on how we can actually have really cool products that are meaningful in the ways they support and solve problems for Black businesses. We work with local governments on how they can expand the way they engage with procurement around Black-owned businesses. And then a lot of it is also just how do we create a kind of language and a kind of versatility around encouraging consumers to buy Black as well. And so I'll say, you know, I've been here from the beginning. You know, when we were coming up with the name, you know, Buy Black, a lot of times people think that we're spelling it wrong. But for us, it's not BUI, because it's not about consumption. We're not really here to talk about how do we consume. It's how do we build more coalitions. So how do we move from encouraging just you and I to buy Black to how do we get everybody to understand what does it mean for our podcast to be created by Black folks? What does it mean for our companies to be run by Black folks? What does it mean for our cities and our governments to also recognize that they can get products by Black businesses? That is what we're really trying to kind of create. I imagine in that kind of journalistic space, a byline. It's what people talk about a lot of the times. And for us, we want Black businesses to be a part of the byline when it comes to this discourse.
Okay. All right. Yeah. No, that's exciting. I look forward to the discussion and digging into this a little bit deeper. So you look like a young guy, man. How did you get to have such a prominent position at such a young age?
I think failing upward is always an easy one. Failing upwards is always easy. No, but I think what really happened is I got a chance to work with there was a gap for a nonprofit organization, the U.S. Black Chambers, and my father's obvious president, but you know, they did not necessarily have a strategy around how do we provide a digital presence for Black-owned businesses across the spectrum. Their focus oftentimes was, how do we get businesses for corporations into a pipeline? But when we would talk, we'd say, well, businesses that do business with corporations can sometimes have business with consumers, can also have business with local governments. They're not exclusive. And so we had to step outside of the very narrow lens of what type of business do we serve and recognize that there's a diverse universe of Black-owned businesses. And when we kind of accept that and have a more comprehensive and really sort of coalesce around the nuances of where Black businesses can be, we stop sort of having such a narrow discussion. And so that's why we can have, for us, we created a certification, the first certification for Black-owned businesses ever. Before, if you wanted to get certified as a Black-owned business, you'd have to have the birth certificate. If you want to be certified as a minority-owned business and you were Black, you'd have to have the birth certificate of a dead grandparent that said Negro or colored on it. And we just said And so we thought that was a completely unfair thing that ultimately stopped a lot of Black-owned businesses from getting resources. Yeah. I mean, you know, there are great examples of people literally having to fly their, you know, elderly grandparents out to a site visit with them. You do these certifications and they want to say, hey, this business is actually a minority-owned business, they would do all these things that actually really created gates and excuses why Black businesses couldn't get into the rooms. And corporations don't do business with companies that don't have certifications. They want to know that when they're buying from a woman-owned business or from a better-known business, that person is actually served, that person is a woman. And so they wouldn't do business with Black-owned businesses because they weren't willing to work with a company that didn't have all of these ridiculous prerequisites that, as we're talking about, are just completely barriers to entry. And so for us, we really said, how do we remove excuses from the discourse? And for us, it was saying, okay, in that the way that we actually step into that gap is by actually saying, we're going to work with a team of folks that are maybe a little more tech savvy, a little more comprehensive, and saying, look, what does it mean to solve this problem for Black-owned businesses generally, and not just for corporations, and not just for consumers, and not just for local governments? We want to solve the problem once and for all. In terms of how I got here, I was volunteering on the project, and I kind of helped raise the money to work on the initiative. And, you know, when I was talking to my dad, he's like, I don't know how we're going to solve this problem, but I'm sure there are some smart younger people who have an idea there. They had tried out a number of different projects that just didn't line up with the goals. They couldn't trust the teams. They couldn't get it to scale. And I'd come from places like Google and Visa and the White House. And that was the experience that I had of just being able to work with organizations that thought really macro. How do we go really big on solving a problem for 3 million people, and that not being a wild conversation? And 3 million business owners is the kind of conversation that we say. Today, one in every 100 Black-owned businesses is owned by Black. That's where we're starting. And how do we go to one in 10 and one in five and one in every one? But I think in terms of how I got here, a lot of it was just being crazy enough to say, we need to be big picture on this problem and include every Black business into the discussion in a way that in the past it hasn't always been.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Because I understand you went to Columbia University. Is that correct?
Yeah. Also, yeah. I went to Columbia.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, so at Columbia, obviously this isn't a class that they teach at Columbia, right? Yeah. So you had a different focus initially, but then obviously you saw the value in this and decided to invest in that direction as opposed to perhaps pursuing what you studied in school. Because I understand you were in track and field also.
Yeah, I was in track team. I was headed off to law school, actually. I'd gotten into a top five school, and it was very clear, like I could go down that legal route and become, a lawyer at a white shoe firm and have all the cushion that would come with that. Or I could try something that just doesn't exist and try to solve and work on a problem that did not have a lot of, there was no clear pathway. You spend all of your life going from high school, good high school, to good college, to good law school, whatever. And then someone tells you, okay, what does it mean to completely abandon all of that structure and make every day your own and choose to solve problems and try to figure out how to raise money and try to figure out how to solve an issue that is completely opaque? It's a radically different worldview for me in that way, like to leave corporate America, where you have a very clear regimen of every year you get this kind of raise and you see this kind of position change and your title matters to this person and you want to get close to the SVP of something. To completely diverge from that and say, I'm going to work, from home, or I'm going to work on the road and be meeting with Black-owned businesses every day of the year to try to really work on this issue. It is not the thing that most of my friends can understand, but it's also not something that I could have imagined myself. So,
Well, that's why I wanted to bring attention to it, because it's not every day that you take something like that. And I'm not going to say you threw it in the trash, but you put it on the side for a greater focus that you thought would have greater impact. So I think that's pretty impressive from that standpoint in order to do that,
I really appreciate that. I'm honestly really grateful. And I just realized at some point in time that I couldn't straddle the line of having, you can't do everything well. And I think, I was realizing that I was trying to have, my corporate job. I was trying to have, my law school career. I was trying to have my work at Buy Black. And I realized the best times that I ever had in college were when I really focused, when it was just one or two things that I was sort of deeply paranoid and focused on trying to address and solve. And that's when I'm the most effective. And for that, I really said, okay, what does it mean to put all those other things aside and for this season of life, really focus on this specific problem? And I tell people all the time, what really is exciting to me is I want to solve problems that shouldn't exist. And I really do believe it shouldn't be this hard to support Black-owned businesses. I don't believe it should be this hard to get Black businesses the capital, the resources, the relationships that we work on from the U.S. Black Chamber side all the time. This, as a platform, should actually be something that does exist. I would love to honestly not be doing this, because if I wasn't doing this, that means that it already existed and someone was doing it and the problem was already addressed. But I want to be able to say that there's a beginning and end to this. I don't feel like this is a job that I will have or want to have 20 years from now. And right. I say it because I think we will hopefully have addressed the really fundamental roots of what has separated Black businesses from the resources and the opportunities that would have made it so they are able to participate in the economy and into the rest of the ecosystem the way that a lot of these white firms, a lot of these minority firms are, you know, just able to thrive.
Yeah, yeah. No, very good point. And I definitely want to take a deeper dive on that. So help me to appreciate again the differences. You mentioned about having to get minority grandparents and all this kind of thing, which sounds absolutely ludicrous to me. But, you know, I'm sure you've already experienced that, so you know what you're talking about. But you have like the MBE certification, the WMBE certificate. You have all these different things. What exactly is that process and how does it differ from what Buy Black is actually doing? And as you mentioned, Buy Black is not BUY, it's actually BY. So BY. Elaborate on that if you don't mind. What's really those differences so we can help understand the value that you're bringing to the table?
Yeah. And so there are a lot of different certifications. There are state certifications, so local county certifications. That is, mm-hmm. you know, and they have different requirements for those. Oftentimes for local governments, they might have just self-identifications. And so in that situation, you might say, hey, I am a woman-owned business. And the only vetting they ask you to do is simply that you say that you are. But a lot of times that would actually not qualify you for a corporate contract because they're going to ask for certain types of vetting that comes from other certifying bodies. NMSDC, yes. example, WeBank might be an example. There are another number of different organizations that provide certifications for certain types of minority status. So as a woman or as a minority or as someone who is of the queer community, someone who's of the disabled community, the veteran community. And often what times happens is Black businesses, and historically speaking, were always just considered minority. And so as you hear, right, we're talking about women, disabled folks, Latino businesses, you're talking about queer-owned businesses, all getting lumped into the same bucket that Black-owned businesses yeah. under minority. And what mm-hmm. is great for a lot of these organizations is they're able to say, hey, yeah, we're spending $1 billion with minority-owned businesses. Not a single one of them is Black. We're spending, you know, $10 billion with minority-owned businesses this year. You know, they couldn't tell you which one of those is a Black mm-hmm. firm. And mm-hmm. so being able to say, hey, look, we actually, you know, coming out of 2020, coming into the rest of the next decade, we don't want to just be having a conversation about minority. We want to be able to say that that's great. We talk about coalitions. We started the conversation with coalitions. We want to be able to say, you owe it to Black businesses to be able to have a very specific conversation about what you're doing for them. Mm-hmm. During 2020, corporations committed to spending $50 billion with minority communities, specifically Black communities, on racial justice issues. The Washington Post put out an article, I want to say about it, maybe a few months ago, saying that only 49.5% of that has not been accounted for. We're talking about 95%, 98% of the funds that they said they were going to spend has not been able to be accounted for in terms of the racial justice work they're saying they're going to do or did. And for us, it's saying we want to be able to have a very specific conversation about Black-owned businesses. We love being able to talk about what it means to support small or minority businesses. That's great. But we want to be able to say, what does it mean to support Black firms? And so what we did is we created a certification that provides people the ability to identify as Black-owned. And the other point I'll make to you as well is it often is so expensive to get certified as a minority-owned business. It can cost hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars as a minority-owned firm. And those certifications don't get you anything. You know, you then take them and use them as marketing collateral. You can put them on yeah. your business card. You can, you know, put them on your website. But you spent that hundreds of dollars, you spent thousands of dollars to get these certifications. And a lot of times businesses will say, it's a cost of doing business that I can't justify because I don't see the value prop. Mm-hmm. And so that's why a lot of Black-owned businesses don't get it beyond the fact that it's arduous, right? We talked about the kind of documentation you need to provide. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's redundant. Sometimes we're asking you to give us four different versions of a form that don't necessarily prove that you're a Black-owned business anyway, or that you own the business. So we've reduced a number of those documents. We've removed the cost. And then we said, actually, we're going to try to connect you to dozens and hundreds of corporations that want to buy from Black-owned businesses specifically. So mm-hmm. we talk about the PGA, we talk about Google, we talk about US Bank, we talk about UPS, we talk about these different, and I think the really interesting thing is it's not just the banking sector, right? It's not just mm-hmm. the insurance sector. It's not just, you know, we have Molson Coors. It's not just the alcohol or beverage sector. We have MGM. It's not just the hospitality sector. You see mm-hmm. that, oh, we've got different businesses that span the entire spectrum of the economy that want to buy Black. So I'm going to need corporations, I'm going to need Black-owned businesses that do, you know, fiber optic cable laying, but I'm also going to need caterers. I'm going to need folks that do baking, but I'm also going to need folks that do construction. I'm going to need to be able to touch, as we talked about, that cohesive list. It's not going to be enough to just have just the folks that do cybersecurity, because we need them as well. Folks are asking for that without a doubt, but we're also having questions where I had a conversation with American Express and they were saying, we want to find some Black-owned bookstores for an event that we're doing. They wanted Black-owned bookstores from across the country. If I had only thought about one segment of the businesses that are right for certain types of business, then I would have never tried to solve for what does it mean to have a Black-owned bookstore as a resource to be able to get to a corporation like an American Express. And so I think realizing that the buying needs are just as diverse as the buyers, and that for us, we try to remove excuses on both ends. For corporations, there's no more of an excuse because I can't find Black-owned businesses because we've got thousands, tens of thousands. For Black-owned businesses, there's no more excuses because we removed the cost. It is a free certification to get certified. That is something that just does not exist. It is faster. It is, you know, I'll put it out there and say, I'm happy to go toe-to-toe with anybody. It's the fastest certification you can do in terms of, you know, before we talked about having to fly folks out to do these site visits. A part of a certification is having someone show up to your office, look inside your desk and see if there are five pencils in there because you said there are five pencils. It's having someone look through your closet and say, hey, look, this business actually has boxes in the closet that say the business's name on it because they do shipping out of that. For a lot of folks during the COVID and the pandemic, they're working from home. They weren't necessarily working from a big warehouse or something like that. And so the ways they do business were also dynamic and unique. 70% of our businesses have some form of a home office. They don't necessarily work just at, you know, their commercial space. They don't necessarily just work at a, you know, a big office space or at a fulfillment center. They're doing some part of their business at home. And so we wanted to be able to create a way that you could virtually in real time do an interview. So you will, as a part of our certification, do an interview. You could literally have, we pre-record a spectrum of different questions based on the different types of business you are. So if you tell us you are an S corp, you say that you have this kind of banking relationship and you have this many number of other you know, fellow owners with you, we will actually populate in a set of questions pre-recorded from someone to ask you about your specific business versus having someone fly in from somewhere else to do that same set of questions to prove to them that you're who you say you are. We do real-time all kinds of using kinds of software and APIs and AI to be able to say, is this business actually, you know, who they say they are. So we're checking your ID against your articles of incorporation. We are talking directly to the Secretary of State's office in every state, all 50, to real-time actually pull documentation so you don't have to write it to us. And I know I'm ranting here, but I'm just saying that for us, it's really recognizing that there are smarter and more sophisticated and more tech-savvy ways to include Black businesses into the conversation that aren't so darn difficult.
Gotcha. That kind of speeds it along a little bit. So you mentioned, you know, for our viewers that it's a free service, number one, and that it's also faster than most of the other things that you will find out there. And I'm kind of curious, was this somewhat reverse engineered? And what I mean is, you know, as you mentioned, you a lot of people get these certifications, but they don't really see the value. Was it a matter of going to the corporations and saying, hey, you made this commitment? What do you need to see in order to make sure you fulfill that commitment? What kind of boxes need to be checked off for you to say, yes, this is a minority or a Black-owned business, and yes, I am going to put money into this business? How did that actually come together?
Yeah, the way it worked, I think, is we're really lucky in that we sit at the intersection of a number of different people's needs. For corporations, we work hand in glove with them because they're already reaching out to us about, you know, before Buy Black ever existed, they were reaching out to the US Black Chambers about how to find a Black-owned business that does this or that thing in Nebraska, in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That was already happening. So they already knew the kind of use case and the problems that they were trying to solve. For business owners, you know, there are 140 local Black-owned chambers, Black chambers around the country that are working with Black-owned businesses every day. You know, there are hundreds of thousands of members in the US Black Chamber. So everywhere there is a Black-owned business, there's a Black Chamber that's very much dedicated to them. And so that relationship already exists. So for us, we really was recognizing that both of these folks have different needs, but those can be solved with one solution. And building it with them hand in glove and consistently over the process allowed us to have something that we launched it. We had thousands of people that showed up. folks like Issa Rae, you know, got her certification as a Black owned business. Folks like Ice Cube have gotten certified as a Black owned business. And the point that we got different types of Black owned businesses, celebrities to your everyday on the block business, they're taking advantage of that. And your Fortune 500 companies, building it with them in tandem, I think has been the best part of working to see this solution get more adoption.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know what that's one of the issues that we face. Obviously, as you know, we're in the real estate on the development side. And what we found was that a lot of companies would say, well, we just can't find any Black real estate developers. You know, and it's like, come on, you know, are you really looking? Because they do exist out there. And yeah. It would sound like an organization like yours would be a benefit to the Black developers that are out there as well, in order to let them know that, hey, we do exist out there and this is how we can bring value.
We are consistently hearing, you know, hey, I'm building out new office space. We are expanding in this location. We are about to do an RFP, an RFQ for, you know, these kinds of, you know, development. Construction is oftentimes like the baseline thing, but development is often the baseline thing that we're hearing from a lot of these corporations because they have a footprint in cities and spaces. And, you know, we've talked and really tried to get them to understand it is unacceptable to just be extractive in a neighborhood and in a community. You cannot just, you know, build a location and take dollars out, but never reinvest them in. Yeah. And so absolutely is a foundational part of what we want to have is that Rolodex. We need to be able to, if I said like, we have to remove, we want to remove the excuses. I need both sides of this to be able to bring it to me because I'm getting corporations to say, hey, you got a company that does this. We're looking to build a warehouse. We're looking to find source of space to be able to do this, you know, next development. They want that. We just need to be able to have the Black-owned businesses that match it everywhere that happens. And I'll also add to this, what we've really tried to be sophisticated on is understanding the area of service. So it doesn't necessarily just need to be that you do business, you're located in Washington, D.C. or, you know, Tampa Bay, Florida. If you do business in Miami, or if you are a Washington-based business, but you also do business in Baltimore or in Virginia, wherever that is, we want to understand your scope of service so that when they have that request, I can say, I've got, you know, somebody who is going to be perfect for this, who might be a few miles out, who may not have exactly the size or scale you're looking for, but you said you have a commitment to this. So can we put them together? Can we actually do joint partnerships, joint ventures? Those are the conversations that we can bring and be really articulate on in that discussion.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. We'll definitely, you know, follow up on that after the call and whatnot, because I think that's very important. You know, one thing that we've seen also in the industry is a lot of times you'll have a larger corporation that will say, okay, we got to have minority participation. So they'll bring you in and basically have you just sit on the shelf and, you know, kick you a cup, flip you a couple of nickels at the end of the day, but it allows them to fulfill their contract. How are you working in, you know, against those type of issues as well, or to help remove those issues in the marketplace? Because I'm sure you've run across it at some point.
Yeah, I think, you know, and even just trying to ensure that companies are actually being inclusive around the businesses that they are considering, right? Like we want actually across your buying spectrum, how can you infuse Black businesses into this? And I think also then when they get a contract asking how did it go, right? It's, you know, not enough to just, because we want to be able to say, for us, I'll say this, if you get a contract, you get a dollar and you did nothing for it, I'm not mad about that. Yeah. But what I really want to do is say, the biggest thing we often hear is past performance, right? There's sky's scope, there's past performance. And if I can say you're good enough to do business with Chase, American Express, whatever, for their project, then you are good enough to do business with Wells Fargo. You are good enough to do business with, you know, UPS or Google. And so for me, I actually want to be able to say, the logistics of how business is done is actually not the thing that I'm so much, you know, nuanced or appreciative of. I want to be able to use and leverage other folks' use of you as a business to be able to go get other folks' business. And gotcha. So I think that actually is being able to say, if the check clears, the check clears. I'm really curious about how do we actually move it so that other companies and other businesses are including that into the discussion. And yes, there's a really important foundational part of making sure that it's not just a kickback or not just a sit on the shelf conversation. That is something that's ultimately going to be spoken to around competency, quality, execution, et cetera. But I do really want to be able to say, if you can work here, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. And that's actually what I'm really trying to do is cycle and expand those businesses in that space.
Okay. All right. That sounds good, which gives them greater opportunity going forward where they're not the sidekick basically sitting on the shelf, you know, waiting to get a couple nickels. So to your point, because you're right. It's not bad if you are making money for doing nothing. But at the end of the day, if you're trying to grow a business, you really do want to do something, right? You want to be engaged in the transaction and in the activity, as opposed to just kind of being, sitting on the bench and, you know, position 15 on a 15 man team, right? Yes, you don't want to be that guy. Yeah. No. Yeah. So I want to dive a little bit into what you've been able to do with American Express. And let me mention this also at this point, we generally do Q&A. So Roland, if any of those calls come in on LinkedIn as well, get those into the chat and we'll see if we can get those questions answered. But you've been able to do some great things with American Express. They've been kind of a leader in, representative appreciation. What most people don't know is Ken Chenault was actually one of my mentors many years ago who led American Express and helped get that company to, you know, through some very difficult times through the recession and 9/11 and everything else. And, what have you guys been able to do with American Express that's so noteworthy? Because they've really been at the forefront of trying to, you know, help with diversity issues.
Yeah, I'm so really extremely grateful for them. And I think I'm really grateful for vision, if that makes sense. It's mm-hmm. being able to imagine a world that doesn't exist and be able to say that we are going to stick through not just the seasonality, where we're not in 2020 anymore, and we're not in a conversation where there are people in the streets the same way, and we are consistently having conversations about how to grow the pie, how do we actually build a marketing apparatus. And I think bringing a big machine like American Express to a scrappier shop like Buy Black and the U.S. Black Chambers, it's a great synergy. But I think it also is a really great opportunity to see how can we take both perspectives? How can we think about how does this scale and how do we actually think about all the different corporations that they work with, all the different folks that are using their cards? How do they think about creating movements and momentum around work? How do we bring that to Black-owned business? And that's the thing that I've really appreciated is being able to step outside of seasonality and say, we're not just talking about a moment. We're not just talking about a day or a week or a Black History Month, but how do we actually move this every day forward? That's the real value. But we've done some really great use cases that we can absolutely talk about. But I think at a macro level, it really is just, it's having the imagination to believe that we can actually work on these problems consistently and without any kind of anxiety about talking about Black business specifically. Like a corporation that's not afraid to say, hey, we're going to work on helping Black businesses. And we can have a whole set of initiatives, someone else's job to focus on that. But when you're talking to Ron, it is okay to use the word Black. It's okay to talk about the issues that Black people are facing. That's really important because, as we said, minority is oftentimes a euphemism for being able to abstract Black from discussion.
Yeah. Very good point. So you mentioned about use cases. I obviously, like I mentioned, American Express is kind of at the forefront of supporting Black businesses. They're also working a lot with small businesses. What are some case studies that you could actually use to kind of help us appreciate, what's going on out there with the Black movement?
Yeah, it's.
And I shouldn't just call it a movement because, that kind of puts it as a seasonal thing. It's not really a movement. It's just a.
No, I agree. We really are trying to, and I think that's the great part about the work is I get to focus on this problem when the spotlight is on or off. Whether it's Juneteenth or February 1st, I and my team, and it really is a team effort. So shout out to them. But we are really thinking about this every day and trying to say, we are going to do that. There is not a world where we are on the job for this and that 3 years from now, 4 years from now, we have not radically addressed some comprehensive things on the use cases around this. In 2021, we did a really cool activation with Easter Ray and American Express, where in LA, we took over a warehouse and we had maybe 16 businesses. And for 2 days before Christmas, we had like a small pop-up. We did about $82,000 worth of sales for those Black businesses that had either shut down during COVID, their retail space, or ultimately just had not been able to ever have a retail space and it opened up during the pandemic. And for a lot of those businesses, it created new customers, it created a real activation, it created an opportunity to demonstrate how they could show up in those spaces. we have been able to move a ton of dollars in terms of grant opportunities and whatnot to Black-owned businesses. There are a number of grants that American Express offers that we've been able to actually connect our certified Black-owned businesses to, because American Express says, I want to get money to Black-owned businesses. I want to know confidently they are certified. So we've actually been able to say, look, here are real dollars that can grow your business, that are no strings attached, that aren't about got to kick it back to somebody, that we've been able to help connect folks to in that sort of element. So there are thousands of dollars that Black's been able to move right into the checks and into the bottom lines of Black businesses in that way. But beyond that, I think we've really been able to do some great work around getting other corporations to understand the value prop around them having their own diverse supply chains. And so I think being able to have an American Express name, brand, and not just a check mark, like, hey, you can slap our logo on something, but them being willing to say, look, here's how we are going to include this into our initiatives, into our language, into our collateral. It makes so that when we talk to US Bank, when we talk to UPS, when we talk to Molson Coors or Google or whomever, we're able to have a really great conversation about, this is not a rinky-dink operation. This is not, you know, a charity case. Yeah. That this is something that actually has real logistical and we talk about like that momentum behind it that's going to, it's moving with or without you. And a lot of folks want to get on the train when they know that other folks are already on it.
Yeah, yeah. That's very true. Nobody wants to be first in the water, but
yes.
A big fan like that is, it really helps. You mentioned earlier that there was an article about $50 billion that were allocated toward Black businesses that really has not been dispersed or funded. And, you know, this is always a concern of mine, because I look back to the Haiti situation, and I've used that example here on this podcast before. You know, while the banners are out and everybody's protesting and you hear all this stuff, it's like, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But then when the news cycle changes, it's almost like, all right, well, we haven't found nothing, so let's just put that money back into the old allocation and say that we did commit it, but we haven't found any businesses to give it to. How do we stop that from happening? Because that money really does need to be, you know, produced out there and dispersed out to the businesses that are out there, you know, as opposed to just put back in their coffers. I mean, what do we do about that?
Yeah, and so I'll say it is towards racial justice. And so I will say there is a convenience around being able to say, we're going to focus on civil rights organization, which is great. We're going to focus on, you know, just general issues that are, you know, hey, we're going to try to fund this thing that's going to maybe help focus on affirmative action. Like, it is a very, there's a opacity that a lot of corporations and organizations sort of like to dance through and move through, which I think is really important. I think the way that we ultimately resolve this is recognizing that everybody can actually be empowered on this. But, you know, wherever you sit, for our local governments, we want to make sure that they are actually holding our corporations accountable, that have space and are taking up or occupying space in our communities. Like, what are you doing? What did you say? And actually, how is that going back? Right. So even if you don't work for McDonald's, even if you don't work for, you know, somebody who's in that place, like, hey, I know what you said. What are you doing to do that? We really need to be pushing corporate accountability and better reporting. And a lot of that comes with actually saying, it's not enough for you to say, I'm going to report this number. Actually, we want to see that you go about doing the work to make it so that other folks can actually unpack and dissect that number. How can we actually make sure that we're able to actually go beyond whatever press release you put out and actually talk to the organizations and the relationships you have to make sure that reflects that? And I'd also say beyond that, when we talk about Black-owned businesses, it's really important for us to talk about certified Black-owned businesses. There was a really interesting article that came out in Black Enterprise maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago that talked about Amazon. And them wanting to, after the sort of everything that had gone over the past 2 years, allow people to find Black-owned businesses in Amazon sort of product search. Black Enterprise was able to show that a lot of the businesses that said they were small or Black-owned, neither small or Black-owned. The businesses that said they were small had thousands of employees. The businesses that were Black-owned didn't have any Black employees, let alone being Black-owned. And so when we let companies sort of be able to facilitate and operate without any accountability and without really good check marks, we know that buying Black is meaningful. We know that people want to be able to support Black-owned businesses. And I say that, once again, we've talked about so many different views of that. We've talked about corporations or local governments or consumers. Amazon saying, hey, we think it's important to let people say that they're Black-owned business. Folks will take advantage of that. people will use the goodwill of not only Black people, but of other folks that want to support minority and Black-owned businesses to take advantage of that and use that as a way to actually go about stealing the halo effect and get in on what is ultimately our community's work in facilitating a kind of culture around buying Black. You know, there's a great article in about Uber as well. They were providing free delivery credits to Black-owned businesses during the pandemic so that people could buy from Black-owned restaurants for Uber Eats. You had Italian restaurants and Chinese restaurants and Greek restaurants that all saw that, oh, Uber actually understands the value of supporting Black-owned businesses, but they're not doing any real checking or vetting of these Black-owned businesses. Yeah. I'll sign up. Give me that too. And so it diminishes and it runs down the dollars that these organizations can give to Black-owned businesses when they ultimately aren't vetting, they aren't checking, they aren't holding accountable, and they are simply sort of, they're just checking the box of Black-owned and sort of saying, hey, look, we did a thing, but then they're not doing any due diligence. And our work really is saying, hey, look, there's no cost to Black business owners, so you can send it to us. There's no cost to you as a corporation to have them get certified, so send them here. And for us, it's saying you cannot get away with just phoning it in. You have to be intentional with this work. And for us, I think to your question, that would be my recommendation is there has to be reporting and they need to use the tools that are available. We do not operate in a world where there aren't options, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, it's all very powerful. And I think the accountability is a big, big point, you know, in order to make sure that that's being done. I completely agree with that. And, you know, hopefully we'll see more reporting. And I think the work that you're doing is probably going to help a large degree in that regard, as regards the reporting and whatnot, to make sure that people are fulfilling their obligations and what they're saying that they're going to do. You know, it's no more frustrating to have somebody promise to do something and not do it, right? I mean, that's just frustrating. And, you know, it's real irritating, I know, for me as well. But let me ask this, I want to kind of clear this up and address this before we, you know, wind up ending today. You remember what the feeling was in America after Obama was elected president, right? Yeah. It was like, the playing field is level. Everything is straight now. Everybody's equal. Everything is cool, right? And then you saw what happened after that there's an undertow of people out here that really feel that their stuff is going to be taken, or, you know, it's not, there's no reason to really support Black businesses because everything is equal. I mean, what would you say about that, just to kind of put it out there? Because, you know, you would wonder, there are people out there that would say, well, there needs to be a buy white, right? Or buy this or buy that. Why buy Black? And why is that so important in your opinion? You know, I just want to address that for the record.
Yeah, I think that we know that supporting Black, 96% of Black-owned businesses are solopreneurs, 1 to 0 employees, right? So, and that's a majority of small businesses. I mean, 90% of small businesses are, solopreneurs. When we say that we want to support and buy from Black businesses, we're really talking about Black people. 90% of the time it's a human conversation. In a world that is full of disaggregated and distant consumption, where I buy from Target and I have no clue who in Bangladesh made the thing, people aspire and really have a deep appreciation for the authenticity, for the artisan, for the thing that's intimate and human. And I think in a world where you can have a conversation with an AI chatbot that literally doesn't even have a corporeal form, has no body, being able to say, I can actually engage with a person who gets me, who has the cultural context, who, when I buy, you know, my product from this Black-owned business, I know that it goes to a Black family. And that means they help actually buy, you know, healthcare for those Black kids, helps go to colleges. It's not charity, but it is ultimately a kind of social impact that you can be making with your dollar that is very direct in a world and in a way that is oftentimes so ephemeral in what it means to actually engage with people and communities. You know, when I go to Walmart or when I go to Amazon, I don't actually know that I'm how and who I'm actually participating with in that commerce. And I think what's really great about being able to buy Black is knowing that you are actually really having a local conversation. You're having a human conversation. And that is across everything. Most, you know, Etsy is a massive platform that's all about getting people connected to consumers and businesses at a very intimate local level. You know, makers is what they call them. That is in a whole economy of recognizing that people want more than anything else to be connected to what they buy at a local level. I want to know where my chickens come from. I want to know, you know, where the eggs come from. The sense of, for us, we've always said is we want buying Black to feel like it's organic. It may not always be easy. It may not always be available every time, but we want the social capital of being able to say there's good, there's connection, and there's community around buying from Black-owned businesses. And I think in those same ways, there is all kinds of downstream impacts of being able to connect Black people, consumers generally, to the Black businesses in their communities.
Yeah, yeah, very good point, you know, to look at it from that way. You know, I look at it also from the standpoint of just the generational wealth opportunities. I mean, if you look at the fact that the majority of the wealthiest people in the country are business owners, you know, and to give these people an opportunity to do that and uplift their families going forward, I think is of value as well. I mean, it's very, very powerful when you think about it.
And I'll also say as well, you know, for us, we recognize that a lot of folks start businesses because they are ultimately alienated from the economy that exists. People yeah. start businesses because they're not being rewarded for the work and the time they put in for their regular day-to-day corporate job, that someone else is taking advantage of their brilliance and their commitment and not getting paid accordingly. And for us, we're saying, okay, we recognize that Black folks start businesses out of necessity also to be able to actually get what they deserve in the economies that they work in. And for us, we really want to be able to put that at the forefront, that there is competency, that there's quality, and that there is commitment to the craft. And for us with this work, we think that we can really, we already see this, 60% of consumers, Black, white, Asian, just generally consumers, are prioritizing buying from Black-owned businesses. This is a 2022 study. There is an absolute appetite of being able to engage. And that's why we have to protect, you know, the phrasing and the naming and the usage of the idea of Black businesses, not just letting anybody kind of get in on it. But I think the idea is that people want to be able to support. And that is not something that you can sort of just be disingenuous about in that way. And I think that's why we're saying it's not enough to just talk about how do I get bakeries? It's not enough to just talk about, you know, construction or real estate development. We really can talk about, we can have multiple conversations at once. And I think that's what we're really proud of in the work that we're doing today.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a very good point. And it's impressive from that standpoint. You know, I was just out in Los Angeles, out your way, actually. And I got a chance to tour there. And I forget the street. It was Manchester and forget the name of the other cross street. But it was an area where one of the buildings that was actually burned down during the Rodney King riots was finally being redeveloped at that area. And part of the conversation was that it was so difficult to really get that done. There was a bunch of false starts and also getting corporations to commit to come back and bring retail areas was a big thing as well. On this particular site, Target is coming as the major anchor from a grocery standpoint, which is very good. That's going to tip people off to where this site is, I'm sure, in that area. But one thing I bring that up just to mention this, that one thing that we're trying to do locally is the projects that we take on and where we develop in the neighborhoods that we buy is to have local community people invest in those deals as well. So they're part owner of the apartment complex or part owner of the retail shopping center, whatever it is, so that they have a sense of community as well and don't have to feel like they're being overrun and gentrified out so that they have to go somewhere else, right? If they have a sense of ownership of what's going on in the community, it raises up all communities. So I think that's one thing that we're really pushing for. And having corporate support and things related to like your program, I think will be outstanding, you know, from a holistic standpoint.
Yeah. And I think the reality is that at least for where, and maybe this is the youth, but I do believe that we can really hopefully solve some of these problems. We can't solve, you know, from where I'm sitting, I can't solve all the economic issues. But when it comes to how do we ultimately really put Black businesses and keep them as a part of the higher consciousness of an economy and a conversation about how we actually really provide and prevent forgetting where Black businesses fit into the whole the discourse, that is the work that we really hope that we'll be able to do. And to realize that there are a lot of great Black businesses and a lot of great folks that are doing great work in their own specific sectors. We had a great conversation with the Association of African American Vintners. That's Black wineries and vineyards. They are doing all kinds of work to make sure that Black-owned wine brands and spirit brands are getting the kind of resources they need. I'm meeting with the Black Franchisees Association, and they're talking about how they can make sure that Black franchises can get access to every type of Chick-fil-A and McDonald's and whatever that might be. We have such great communities that are focused really in a tailored way. Obviously, we've got, you know, the real estate development community as well. We want to be able to have those relationships to be able to say, look, these are also our ambassadors that understand how do we actually go about translating the conversations that we're having here at the U.S. Black Chambers and Buy Black into the terms and into the language and into the needs that those communities are also trying to address, and that you all have amazing ways of being able to do that in your own, you know, venture, and that there are great models to be able to engage with Black people through the Black businesses that they're also, you know, in conversation with. So I'm a fan of the work for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, I'm a collector of some wines myself and, you know, didn't even know that there were Black owners of vineyards. You see what I mean? So yeah. that kind of makes the point, you know, and shame on me for not knowing. Right.
Of course.
So, big shame. Yeah. Big shame. Yeah. I mean, so that's good to bring up. Let me ask you this also, just kind of as a way to wrap up. What are some of the corporations that you think you would like to shout out and help us to appreciate are actually supporting your effort and are really behind getting this thing done so that they can get more support as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for us, we really want to just encourage the corporations that we work with. One, they're doing, you know, great work today, obviously, if they're working with us, but we want to obviously grow that support in so ways that we can actually go about sort of saying, hey, look, what you're doing is great. How do we do more? You know, we've got Verizon. I know they've actually expanded the relationship they're doing with the UX Black Chambers and Buy Black. Obviously, American Express is a great advocate, and I think we really appreciate that and the different nuances. So if you come to the U.S. Black Chambers conference we're having in D.C. this summer, they will be a big part of that. Uber, the PGA, Molson Coors, Microsoft, U.S. Bank, Meta, so, you know, Facebook, just be able to show that it really is from tech down to, you know, the regular, you know, day-to-day business operations, whether it's Google or Chase, Lowe's, MGM, HEB, which is a grocer that we've been working with. We really appreciate the fact that they understand what we are doing. We want to grow that. We also want to really encourage every corporation that works with Black of Business to share that with us. Because if they're good enough to do business with HEB or they're good enough to do business with American Express, they're probably good enough to do business with any other corporation.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so that's actually what we really want to be able to do is source and crowdsource some of this stuff from as well. The biggest corporations that have given, as we talked about, that their own stamp of approval, even if you're sitting on the shelf, you're good enough shit on the shelf. I want to make sure you're sitting on someone else's shelf, getting a check regardless. And so that's the work that I'm really advocating for as well in this.
Gotcha. Real good. So, all right. Well, hey, man, it's been a great conversation. I'm certainly happy we had a chance to get you on. You know, we have been trying to get your father for a while, but he was like, no, I think Ron is going to be the one that will really carry this over the top and share what needs to be shared. So I agree with that. I think you did a great job in helping us to appreciate the work that you're doing and whatnot. And any closing thoughts as to what you want us to really know or you want to share with our audience today?
Please, you know, if you know a Black-owned business, we really encourage you to have them join Buy Black, you know, BYBLACK.US. If you are someone who just likes supporting Black businesses or wants to know about really creative ways that we are trying to do social impact work, right? Let alone Black business, but really trying to think about expanding the space generally, you can follow us on social media, on Instagram at BYBLACK.US. And then beyond that, I think become a member of a local Black chamber. We have so many chambers of commerce around the country that really do understand and are so focused on how they can provide educational resources, all kinds of events and matchmaking that is happening at a local level. And so if you're not a member of a Black chamber, you are actually absolutely missing out on relationships, and you've got to be in the rooms to be able to take advantage of the opportunities. We talk a lot about democratizing access. Not everyone's going to be listening to this podcast. Not everyone's going to be able to be in the rooms that we're in. But if they're not associated with the people that are in those rooms, they are going to be missing out. And so we really need people to understand that they have to, membership has its benefits. So take advantage of those things. Become a member of the U.S. Black Chambers as well. There are so many great resources that happen at a national level. If you are not ultimately participating in that, it's, you know, it's your dollars that are kind of on the line. And as I said, Buy Black offers all of our resources today at no cost. There is no excuse that every Black-owned business is not certified. Every Black-owned business is not on Buy Black. And that, you know, we're willing to meet you where you are to get you across the finish line. As I said, we want to be able to make sure that everybody's able to get involved, because there's like, the types of businesses that want to work with Black businesses are always varied. I never know who I'm going to hear from today or tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to have an answer on that. And so it's really important. The PGA is a golf league. They're asking about how do they find, you know, a certain type of businesses for this, for their tour. If I don't have somebody who is around to do that, you're not, you know, paying your dues in terms of being a part of these organizations. It, you know, when the opportunity strikes, I don't want to miss out on the Black businesses that can participate.
Yeah. Good point. So keep that in mind, everyone. The website again is Buy Black. That's BYBLACK.US. And right. That will give you all you need to know in order to find out and participate in this. Ron, it's been a great conversation, a lot of good information, and certainly appreciate having you here today.
No, I really appreciate being here, and I look forward to just hearing more about the work you're doing. And I know that this is the first time, but not the last time, that we'll be talking. And I say as well for all the Black businesses that hopefully are a part of the podcast and the universe that you get a chance to touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So thank you so much. We appreciate that. And certainly won't be the last conversation that we have. So again, thank you all for being with us today. This is the Mornings with Joel CRE podcast. Again, our special guest today was Ron Busby with buyblack.us. And I certainly look forward to speaking with him again. Thank you all. Appreciate having you here today. Have a good day. You've been listening to Mornings with Joel, commercial real estate podcast, where we focus on rising stars and established players in commercial real estate and talk to them about how they are building legacies in today's marketplace. Please check back weekly to hear our upcoming guests.